but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I am very interested in Iowa football. And so, you know, I'm not just going to Google or ChatGPT it or, I'm going to the beat reporter who covers the Iowa Hawkeyes, Des Moines Register. Tyler Tackman is the beat reporter who covers them. Good newspaper, great reporter. It's got a good beat there. There's a lot of interest in it. We're going to talk to Tyler coming up here about Iowa, Oregon. Oregon's been playing AC/DC's Back in Black during practices. It's Iowa week. So we go to Iowa. Tyler Tackman joining us now. Tyler, thanks for making time for us, man. Appreciate you.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. I can't make any promises that I'm better than ChatGPT, though. So.
Well,
I'll try my best.
Give us an idea of how strong the following of Iowa football is. Like, when you're on that beat, what's your life like? What's your email inbox? What's your Twitter feed looking like?
Yeah, well, the thing is, there's no, like, major professional sports in Iowa. There's no NFL, no MLB, no NBA. So the Iowa Hawkeyes kind of are the professional sports. So, you know, there's been just the passion at Kinnick Stadium. It is sort of like Iowa's NFL team in a sense. So that gives you a little bit of a window into just how much the fan base cares. It's kind of treated like a NFL team, even though it's a college program. And obviously you have your Bears fans and Packers fans and Lions fans in the state, but there's really a hunger and a passion for the Hawkeyes in the state of Iowa.
I am interested in what you think the strength of this Iowa team is. Kirk Ferentz coach team, do they change much? What is sort of the feel of this team?
No, I mean, the thing about Iowa football, for better or for worse, is that you know who they're going to be, and that's a hard-nosed, tough, disciplined football team. They're going to have a really good defense that's held true this season. And in fact, it was a little bit of an interesting dynamic coming into this season because Iowa lost some stars from last season's team that had been multi-year starters, and it was a little bit of a new era of guys on the defensive side of the ball who just hadn't had a lot of game experience, and they've come in and really upheld the standard of Iowa football defense. And the defensive coordinator Phil Parker has been here for a really long time. He's kind of a local legend, and just the way that he has year after year been able to produce elite defenses, and this is an Iowa defense that has lived up to that standard so far this season. And then the offensive line, you know, you feel like when you think about Iowa, you feel like you're going to get that really physical, good offensive line. And there was a stretch kind of a few years ago where it wasn't to that standard, and Iowa's offensive line kind of went through a rebuild under their position coach George Barnett, but the last two seasons their offensive line has been really elite and one of the best in college football. So it's very much a identity of Iowa football that kind of comes to the top of the mind when you think about the program. And I know that might be a little bit more foreign to people in the Pacific Northwest, given the fact that Oregon is just moved into the Big Ten as of last season. But it's very much an Iowa football team that is delivering to what the identity has been for so long under Kirk Ferentz.
Give us an idea of how big this game is. You know, Ohio State's come there. This is big games there in Iowa City are not, you know, not few and far between. But Oregon coming to town, what does that look like in Iowa City?
Yeah, very big, because this is a game where it feels like there's a legitimate shot Iowa can win. And there's something dangerous in the air right now in Iowa City, and that's hope. And that's the way that Iowa has played the last few weeks. I mean, even the Indiana game, which they lost, they played them closer than Oregon did. And that was a loss that it hurt because of how well Iowa played, and it felt like they really had a chance to knock the Hoosiers off and weren't able to ultimately finish the deal. But since then, they blew out Wisconsin on the road. They absolutely steamrolled Minnesota, and then they beat a Penn State team the first game after James Franklin was dismissed. So this is a Iowa team that has really been finding its stride. The offense, from a passing perspective, is not going to be explosive, but they have a really good running game. Mark Gronowski at quarterback has been a major upgrade over what they've had the last few seasons as a position group at quarterback that has really struggled. So there's the pieces in the place and the production and the eye test that has given fans a sense of hope that, hey, this is a team that has some momentum to it, that is a really good football team. So that's kind of the sense with Oregon coming to town, is that, you know, you have a chance at Kinnick Stadium, a difficult place for opposing teams to come in and win. You have a chance to knock off a really high-level team. And the other dynamic to it is this, is that Iowa has not beaten a ranked team since 2021. So they've been in this type of situation before, and there's been letdowns over and over again, and it feels like Iowa fans are sort of in a vulnerable position because they've gotten their hopes up before and they've gotten burned for it. But because of what I kind of outlined in terms of the way this team has been playing and building momentum, there's a sense that there's a legitimate chance that Iowa can finally kind of break through against that upper echelon competition.
How much of that has to do with Iowa's strength and people going, gosh, this is a sneaky good or a real good Iowa team, versus maybe some vulnerability they see after Oregon loses to Indiana and maybe the Penn State win for Oregon doesn't look so good?
Yeah, I think it's both. And, you know, you look at the Indiana game for Iowa and Oregon, and that was a road game for Indiana in both of those venues. And, you know, like I said, Iowa played them closer. They were both pretty tight games, but that was, you know, some of these, like I referenced, Iowa hasn't beaten a ranked team since 2021, and some of those games have been very ugly for Iowa. Like in 2023, two seasons ago, they lost their three ranked games. It was a combined 92-0. So you're talking about absolutely bloodbaths. But the last three games against ranked opponents, Iowa has been much more competitive. They lost by three in their bowl game last season. They lost at Iowa State this season by a field goal, which that's a loss that Iowa really would want to have back. It was a different Iowa State team in week two than it is now. And then the Indiana game, which Iowa ultimately lost by five in. But they've looked like a much more competitive team against those type of competition than they have during this drought where they've been unable to break through. And that really speaks to where Iowa is as a program. Like, they're extremely consistent. They're much, much better than your typical average run-of-the-mill college football program. But they haven't been able to break through to, like, that upper class of college football. So they're kind of in no man's land a little bit in that sense. And that's why this game, to me, it kind of represents, like, if you want that national respect, like this is a game that you're eventually going to have to win, and this is like just a prime opportunity given the way Iowa's playing, given that it's at Kinnick Stadium. Like, this is a prime opportunity for you to finally break through.
Tyler Tachman with us, Des Moines Register, covers Iowa Hawkeyes football. You mentioned the head coach, Kirk Ferentz. What's he like to cover? What's the identity? What is he like on a daily basis? What's your access like? Take us behind the scenes.
Yeah, no, I really enjoy covering him. He has a very dry sense of humor, but he's great with media. Access is good in terms of we're able to talk to players, and Kirk Ferentz is typically just pretty open with the media in general. Obviously, there's some things where he's more closed about than others, but he's been, you know, he's been doing this for a really long time. This is his 27th year as Iowa's head coach, and the one thing is it's just something you don't see anymore in the modern landscape. I mean, you think about guys that the leashes are becoming increasingly shorter. You just don't see this type of stability anymore in college football. So the fact that he has managed to, like, not have a season where things have just totally fallen off the rails to the point of where the administration is like, hey, like, this, you know, maybe we need to look at a change here. Like, that hasn't happened with Kirk Ferentz, you know, over the last handful of years. And, you know, just the consistency, the way that Iowa is pretty selective in the transfer portal. They're not going to bring in, like, huge classes typically in the transfer portal. You don't see a lot of guys jumping in the transfer portal. So it's a place that people want to come and want to stay. And that kind of starts with Kirk Ferentz, his personality, and the fact that, I mean, he is up there in age. He's one of the oldest coaches in college football, but, like, he just has a real ability to connect with people and people that are younger in college, high school recruits. He just has it's a pretty fun personality. He doesn't take himself too seriously. And I think that's part of what has made Iowa what it is.
He compared Oregon and their NIL collective to kind of what the Dodgers and Yankees do in baseball. And I find it interesting that Mike Gundy tried to do the same thing, but he was so clumsy with it that it came off as a slap. Is Ferentz being careful here? Is he delicate? Is it more just his style that people look at him and go, he's 70 years old, he's not trying to throw shade here? How do you sort of read what he's been talking about this week?
Yeah, no, he is very aware of what he says media-wise. Very rarely do you hear him take shots at people. He's very cordial, very complimentary. There, he will pick his spots where he will be critical of things, but he is very non-confrontational in the sense of, like, trying to give other teams bulletin board material and things of that nature. So, you know, that's just kind of how he is. You know, he's pretty, I want to say, easygoing in the sense of he's not going to say super flamboyant things. And you know, kind of what comes to mind is, like, he's sort of like the anti-Kurt Cignetti, who Kurt Cignetti is going to say things to kind of rile people up and to that he knows are going to make headlines. And Kirk Ferentz is very much not that. He's not going to, like I said, try to really stir things up or have bulletin board material for other people. So that the way he goes about things, I think it also just has kind of like a very genuine a genuineness to him, where it's, I don't know, he's pretty down to earth in that sense.
I am interested in what the view of Oregon coming into the conference was, you know, a year ago. And I thought about programs like Iowa, Tyler, because, you know, for Iowa, this was one more school you got to climb over, right? It's one more that you, one more program they got to get over to get to the top of the conference. How was Oregon's arrival in the conference viewed, and has that shifted at all in the last year or so after watching them go undefeated that first season?
No, I mean, I think you hit it pretty spot on. It was one of those where before those former Pac-12 teams come into the Big Ten, the kind of traditional powerhouses of the Big Ten were Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State. And then, you know, you kind of have a tier below them, like your Wisconsin's historically, your Iowa's, and there was a pretty clear gap between those three and who was below it. And with Oregon coming in, with Washington coming in, what they did with Michael Penix Jr. and Kalen DeBoer, I mean, and USC, and you know, to a much lesser extent, UCLA with the way that they've struggled recently. But it was another one of the things where, like, okay, so where is Iowa stand in the pecking order here in the Big Ten? Because now you're looking at where maybe if they were below that upper echelon before, like, you know, maybe finishing fourth in the Big Ten would be kind of a realistic benchmark. But now You know, you're behind Oregon. If you're behind a Washington, then you're talking about being middle of the pack, you know, eighth, ninth in the Big Ten. Like, it was another barrier that I was going to have to climb. And part of that was, like I said, the fact that Iowa has just struggled against that level of competition and not been able to win those types of big games. So it was another thing where you look at, okay, well, you're going to have to play either Washington or Oregon every year. You're going to have to play USC or UCLA. So just like basically every other team in the Big Ten, like, it just made the road a lot bigger. And I think it kind of accentuated the fact that, hey, you're going to have to win some of these big games at a certain point if you're going to want to break through kind of where you stand in that middle ground of the Big Ten of being better than the bottom dwellers in the middle of the pack, but not quite being able to break through to that upper group.
I am interested in what you think the factors in this game are going to be. Oregon is coming in there. You know the weather better than I. You're walking around. You're in it now. You're kind of watching what's going on. You know Iowa's program. What are the big factors for you in the game? What are you paying attention to, Tyler?
Yeah, the trenches for sure. Iowa's ability to run the ball. The offensive line has been really good this season, and Iowa's passing game is not good at all, but they've been able to survive and honestly thrive offensively without it. So can Iowa run the ball? And then on the other end of things, can Iowa stop the run? Because Oregon's offense, and as you know probably much better than I do, is dynamic, and I think you have to make them one-dimensional. I don't think you can let Dante Moore throw the ball around the yard and have Oregon's run game go crazy. I think you have to, if you're Iowa, stop the run and make, you know, Dante Moore make plays. And he's been really good this season, but I was kind of looking back, like, what is the blueprint for beating Oregon? And you naturally just go to the Indiana game. You know, he was sacked six times through two interceptions. That's kind of the formula that Iowa's defense is going to have to take. They've been tremendous the last three games in between their first and second bye week at creating takeaways. They almost had, in three consecutive weeks, they almost had a pick six in each of those weeks. They almost had one against Wisconsin, was stopped just short of the goal line. Same thing against Penn State. And then they finally broke through against Minnesota with a pick six. But they have been very good at creating havoc and generating turnovers, and those are the types of momentum swinging plays that I was going to need to have to be able to beat Oregon. And that kind of couples with the crowd. Like, this is going to be an Iowa crowd that is going to be very, very hungry for a win, and that just makes things, you know, when you couple that with the defense, that's where you can kind of maybe chip away at some of Oregon's talent and their playmakers on the outside. So there's a lot of things, honestly. We probably could talk for 20 minutes about what Iowa needs to do in order to win. There's going to have to be a lot of things that they have to do right. But, you know, I think it's possible. It's on the table for Iowa to win. I picked Oregon to win. But there's Iowa, I think, at least has a fighting chance in this game.
I think it's been a great game. And I think, you know, the Indiana game, you can tell me how you felt when Iowa played Indiana. But Indiana controlled the line of scrimmage. Oregon struggled. It was surprising to me to see first play of the game, sack. Dante Moore sacked. And that didn't stop. He was uncomfortable all game. He couldn't get his eyes up to look down the field. He seemed to be distracted by the pass rush in front of him and some problems on the offensive line. And then, you know, subsequently, Wisconsin did a little bit of that to Oregon as well, even though Oregon won that game going away. Can Iowa's front seven, can they give Oregon's offensive line problems, Tyler?
Yeah, the defensive line has been good. You look across sort of the key guys. Aaron Graves on the interior, he's a physical specimen. He's been really good this season. And then Iowa has some talented edge guys. Max Llewellyn has had several sacks this season. Brian Allen, Ethan Herkett. So the defensive line has been pretty disruptive this season. And, you know, another factor in this is that Phil Parker, Iowa's defensive coordinator, he has been pretty aggressive in dialing up blitzes. Iowa will bring their safeties. They'll bring Zach Luttmer, who plays their cash position, which is sort of, you know, a hybrid safety linebacker. You know, he can slot corner essentially, but they can bring him. He's really athletic. And so, you know, that's kind of how Iowa they didn't slow down Fernando Mendoza of Indiana, but they were able to get him out of rhythm a little bit by bringing pressure, making him uncomfortable in the pocket. So that's, you know, as you kind of talk through what Indiana was able to do against Oregon, that's an area I think that Iowa could potentially exploit. I think the defensive line could potentially be the X factor in this game of, one, stopping the run, but two, just getting, you know, Dante Moore off platform a little bit. And that's where, you know, Iowa's defense and secondary has been really good at capitalizing off of that. And then you kind of get the crowd into it. That's the way that I think Iowa can really swing the game in their favor.
Tyler Tackman, Des Moines Register, is our guest. You know, before we go here, you picked Oregon. I'm curious why you picked Oregon. Is it just you felt they had more playmakers despite the home field, or what was the factor in your mind that tipped your pick to Oregon?
Yeah, well, one, I think the talent gap, just the talent, the speed that Oregon has. Iowa, I mean, that's kind of where they get in trouble a little bit, is these types of games where they don't have as much talent against a program that is able to attract those, you know, types of dynamic playmakers. And the other reason is just Iowa, like I said, they haven't been able to break through in this type of game. Iowa fans have been burned over and over again since 2021, getting their hopes up. And it's just one of those things where it's hard to see Iowa doing it until they finally actually do it. Like, that, it just puts too much doubt in my mind, where Iowa has to play almost a perfect game. And there's a formula to get there, because the game that Iowa played against Indiana, it was almost perfect. They basically played a game. They made Indiana play their style. It was low scoring. It was ugly. Iowa did a great job possessing the ball, but there was like 4 to 5 plays that they didn't make that swung that game. And one of them was Mark Gronowski threw an interception on Iowa's first offensive drive of the game, and Indiana quickly turned that into 7 points. Indiana drove down the field really quickly at the end of the first half and kick a field goal. Then there was the game-winning touchdown in the fourth quarter, where Iowa's secondary missed on a tackle, and that ended up being the difference in the game. So there was, like, Iowa played 95% a really good game, but there was like 4 to 5 plays where if they had made 2 to 3 of them, they would have won, and they didn't. And that's kind of, they're going to have to play that type of game against Oregon, but eliminate those mistakes. I just don't think the margin for error, I'm just not quite sure Iowa, with all the factors that Oregon has going for it, the talent, the fact that Iowa hasn't won this type of game, I just don't think the margin for error is big enough for Iowa.
I appreciate you making time, Tyler. Good luck to you. For people who want to follow Tyler, he's a really good follow on social media as well. You can find him at Tyler_T15. Tyler, thank you, man. I appreciate you.
Yes, sir. Hopefully I was better than ChatGPT.
You were better, way better, man. Way better than ChatGPT. Steven, your quick takeaways as you hear Tyler Tackman there talking about Oregon, Iowa. It scared me for Oregon a little bit, because the Indiana game had that catharsis feel to it as well, that Indiana hadn't had a win against a top 10 team on the road. And the Hoosiers went into Autzen Stadium kind of on a mission. Iowa feels like it's in a similar position, where like they're trying to break through and do something they haven't done before. And this Oregon team's just a little vulnerable in some ways. They're really good, but they're vulnerable.
To a lesser extent, John, it kind of reminds me of Oregon versus Ohio State last year, when Ohio State came to Autzen. Like, the thought that Oregon had to get this win to get over the hump, like, Dan Lanning needed this win. And just the thought and the hype and the excitement, the energy that the fans had going into the game, he kind of made it out like, this is it for Iowa football. Like, they need to get this win. And he had a quote, John, that really stuck out to me. He said, there's something dangerous in the air in Iowa City, and that's hope. They feel like this might be it. Like, if Iowa ever wants to take that next step, this is the game. And so what kind of effort are you going to get out of Iowa? 100%. You know, balls on the wall. Kirk fans not going to hold anything back. The fans are going to be all over them night game. I mean, if I'm a Duck fan, I'm nervous right now.
If you are an Oregon fan, I think you have to be, given the way that Oregon has played this season. They haven't looked invincible. I want phone calls for casual observers, Oregon fans. How do you see this Iowa game? Do you think Oregon can navigate the Iowa, Minnesota, USC, Washington run without losing? I reached out yesterday to Softy from KJR in Seattle, and I said, how are you feeling about the final four games of the year? He said the first three, they're going to win. He said, then it's on. Oregon against Washington, November 29th in Seattle. Can the Ducks get through this weekend unscathed? 503-417-7575. Tell me where your biggest concern is for the Oregon Ducks this weekend, what you think's going to happen, and what happens when Oregon plays Washington at the end of the year. I think it's going to be a big one. Leave it here.